My name is Leonard Moore. I teach at the University of Texas. I'm a native of Cleveland and a proud graduate of Jackson State University, historically black college, and went to grad school at Ohio State. So we had a panel today dealing with the whole Black Lives Matter piece. And I moderated a panel of three police chiefs, Acevedo from Austin, a brother named Buckner from Little Rock, Arkansas, and a white brother named Ramsdale from Tacoma.
They're all chiefs.
All chief of police, right. And so just getting their perspective on this relationship between law enforcement and particularly the African-American community.
So you didn't give them an easy time. You press with the questions and you press them. How do you think they responded?
I think they responded well. I mean, you know, I told them we could do it one of two ways. We could do it the Chamber of Commerce way, where it's, you know, not authentic, where it's just surface level, or we could try to get a little deeper. And I think, you know, I think we've had some very fruitful discussions. And I really appreciate how they all emphasize the fact that we have good cops, but too often we let one, two, or three, or four, you know, it allows us to paint all cops with a broad brush. And I think Acevedo said that there's this myth that black and Latinos don't like law enforcement. He said, no, we're big time supporters of law enforcement because our communities are the ones under siege so much. So I think that was something that was good to point out, that no, we do support the police. We support the good police. We don't like the bad police.
Could you tell me a little bit about your work? How did you get to be the moderator of this session? You have to have some level of expertise or respect within the area.
I think they know me, man. You know, I've been here 8 years. I teach UT. I teach large classes, about 550
What do you
students.
Teach?
One class on the Black Power Movement and another class called Race and Age of Obama. So very student-centered professor. You know, I'm very critical of a lot of academic research, but that's the discussion for another day. But I've always felt that, you know, the role for black academics is to have one foot in the university and also one foot in the community.
Right.
You know, we can't be all ivory towers, so that's sort of been the way I've operated.
It seemed that there was an era of respectability politics that was going on session.
I'm very critical of Ta-Nehisi Coates and these other folks who I would argue are so into white liberal ideology that we criticize somebody for saying that black men need to be better fathers. And I don't know where that came from. We have always been a do for self community. We have always been a community that's going to raise our family, raise our children, discipline our children. We've always valued education. But it seems like, I don't know if it's these black liberal academics. I mean, like Jason Whitlock pointed out yesterday in his article, you know, this whole movement, these black folk are atheists. They don't have any connection to the church or any faith community. And any talk of black people doing for self, they respond with, oh, that's respectability politics. So becoming a better father has nothing to do with white folks.
So for our listeners,
yeah,
you and I, we're both professors.
Yeah.
So we both understand the literature and the history behind respectability politics starting in the early 1900s, you know, with the Women's Convention and black women especially going into communities telling community members what they need to do and how they should.
Right.
We know the history.
I don't see anything wrong with that.
So I push and ask the question on behalf of some people who may be listening. It's like, well, where is that in the Constitution or laws or bylaws that you have to look a certain way in order to not be treated unfairly or illegally?
I don't think respectability politics is about. I think it's about understanding that you live in an oppressed community. I mean, and I think Milana Karenga said it best. There was a brother running for city council in Newark in, I think, 1969, 1970, and the brother was campaigning with a dashiki on. Now, Karenga now,
right?
Father Kwanzaa and all that, went to Newark, and he said, what are you doing? The brother said, what do you mean? He said, why are you campaigning in dashiki? He said, because I'm just trying to be true to my heritage. He said, we understand you're trying to be true to your heritage, but now we need you to win the city council election. And you don't get any white votes by being true to your heritage. So, I mean, if Karenga can say that, but, you know, I think a lot of black academics, man, are so out of touch with reality, completely out of touch with reality, because for a lot of those folks, they think their scholarship is activism. But my point is, you got to leave your office,
right?
And when you constantly write stuff that journal articles that aren't even accessible,
right?
I think so. In some ways, you know, it's this academic activism. What I write is my activism, I just disagree with that, man. But we need to be better family. We need to be better fathers. Our family structure needs to get better, and that has nothing to do with Republican or Democrat. It's about our kids. I had a discussion with a couple of feminists one time, and they said that you know, they were talking about, you know, patriarchy. Said we didn't need fathers. And the ironic thing about it is that these two women went to Smith up in Massachusetts, and I think another one went to Swarthmore. And I just simply asked them, okay, let's go with this premise that we don't need fathers. Who paid for y'all to go to college?
What was their response?
Their daddies.
What was their facial expression when you asked?
They had, and I just said, it's very arrogant of you who had daddies, who had a privileged life, to go to sum up and say, you don't need fathers. No, I think we need fathers, mothers, grandparents, we need everybody. But this white liberal ideology, man, and don't hear some of this.
Yeah, I'll edit that.
I think it has really taken over much of our black discourse.
So I'll conclude with this. Is there anything that I haven't asked that you'd like to share, or do you have a question for me?
No, we're good.
So the final question.
Yeah.
What song should accompany this segment?
Probably Common 1999. Yeah.
Why that one?
I don't know. I like the beat. All right. But why'd you, okay, we done? Why'd you bring up respectability politics? And why?
So we're back. So I had to ask and follow up and come clean. You just called me to the carpet. Mm-hmm. You called me to the carpet during a break. You gave me a chin check. You gave me a kidney punch. He's like, Oliver, why'd you ask that question about respectability politics? And so I explained, and I went from the angle of, well, I want to push the envelope, not only for myself as a consumer of information and a community member, but also for the listeners, and then explain what it is. But then for that person who says, well, what difference does it make what I wear or how I speak? Why should that be a representation, or why should that determine how I'm treated? And so you went in, and I appreciate it. And so I had to ask if we can come back and pick up there. And so you went in and you talked about the responsibility of the educated black folk and community, and how we've been nurtured, how we've been supported, how we've been, you know, acknowledged to get the positions that we have, and then we forget where we came from and often remove ourselves from those same communities and no longer support them.
You know, the danger is that, man, most intellectuals live above their necks, and that's dangerous. And so what happens, you know, our whole life becomes about publishing the next journal article, going to deliver a paper. Who ever heard of somebody reading a paper, man? When did that ever become a part of our culture?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So in many ways, when I talk to a lot of black academics, frustrated, depressed, and it's because I believe they've neglected the institutions that helped them get here. You know, the biggest thing for me, Oliver, man, when I was a PhD student at Ohio State, really involved in a church, but on Thursday nights, I worked in a program on the east side of Columbus mentoring black boys, man. And that kind of stuff, when you deal with folk with real issues, then you realize, well, this journal article ain't the end all be all. You know what I mean? And I became a professor, man, to motivate students.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So you know, and it's, and so I think oftentimes, man, when we aren't plugged into community, we just got stuff racing around in our brain over and over and over. And when all we talk to are other academics,
right,
that's even more problematic.
When do you think it happens where the academics lose their connection with communicating with the community?
I think when we get in a PhD program.
Once we start the program.
I really believe that is where the socialization process
PhD
starts.
Or undergrad?
PhD. And I ask every PhD candidate, I said, tell me what your dissertation is on about. Then I say, okay, explain it like you're going to explain it to your grandmother. And some of them can't even do it.
Wow.
And so that's why I like doing community stuff. I mean, I teach large class of 500 students because it keeps me grounded. You know what I'm saying? It keeps me rooted. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I just think, man, we need to change up. It seems like to me that we are that the academy, man, it's different. It's a different kind of place. You know what I mean? Where the only thing that is often rewarded, right, is working in isolation, right?
Sole authors.
So, right. Smart in isolation. People not going to read it. But I think it also becomes addictive because that is the reward structure. Mm. So I've had professors tell me, well, no, Dr. Moore, I can't mentor those students. I'm working on a paper. You know what I mean?
Wow. Wow. Hey, thanks for your time, man.
Appreciate it, man.
You were in the clear.
All right. Thank you, man. So where are you at on that stuff, man? We'll be right back.